With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, on this fabulous hump day. It is Wednesday all across America. All right, joining us in the opening segment will be LeVar Arrington. We'll go out to his crib in Pasadena as we talk about Dak Prescott. We got a great show planned for you today. There's rumors the Browns may be ready to move on from OBJ. We'll get into that in the next segment. And also, Bill Laimbeer says that LeBron James is the greatest player of all time ahead of Michael Jordan. Is he being honest or is he just hate Michael Jordan? But first, we're going to begin with Dak Prescott. And I want to ask the question, did anyone read Dak Prescott, his Miranda rights? Yeah, where the hell are Lenny Briscoe and Ed Green from Law and Order? This house party controversy for Dak Prescott is turning into Dak in disorder, and I don't think Dak knows that he has the right to remain silent, and anything he says can and will be used against him in the court of public opinion. All right, so let me get you up to speed on what's happened here. So TMZ reported that Dak and Zeke Elliott threw a birthday bash for a mutual friend at Dak's crib. TMZ has some video of the festivities, and according to their sources, Dak violated every social distancing rule that we have established for the coronavirus. According to TMZ, as many as 30 people were partying with Dak and Zeke at Dak's house. Look, some people are upset. They're irate. Former Cowboy and current ESPN talking head Marcus Spears blasted Dak for having the party. On this very show, right here on Speak for Yourself, we had a discussion about whether or not Dak is becoming a bad boy because his contract negotiations aren't going very well with the Jones brothers, or Jerry Jones and his son Stephen Jones. But yesterday, this is where I think Dak really screwed up. He issued a statement addressing the TMZ report and the whole house party controversy. Let me read from the statement. I understand and accept that there are additional responsibilities and media scrutiny that come with being an NFL quarterback. But it is very frustrating and disappointing when people provide completely inaccurate information from anonymous sources, especially now. To set the record straight, I know that we all need to do our best to socially distance like everyone else. I am continuing to adjust to what that requires, but the truth is that I was with fewer than 10 people for a home dinner, not a party, on Friday night. Dak, I'm sorry, bro. You done messed up here. You have the right to remain silent. You don't go to war with a man like Harvey Levin and TMZ. You know what you've done? Yeah. Okay, so what? TMZ screwed up and showed a picture of the restaurant dinner table and claimed it was a party. It was your dinner table at your house. So who cares? They got video. They have the video of all that food and Becky with the good hair. Look at all them French fries. You feed more than 10 people, man. Don't tell that lie. By challenging Harvey Levin, you have made Harvey and his crew put on their Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson outfit. They coming for you, Dak. They coming for you, Dak. You done messed up the game. You set off a war. At times like this, you keep your mouth shut, you keep your head down, you let your lawyers and your agents do all the talking. You just lay in the cut. This is a bad look. This is a bad look for everybody associated with the Cowboys. Who's raising Dak in Dallas? Where are the OGs with the Cowboys that are showing Dak how to handle this? I blame Michael Irvin. I blame Deion Sanders. I blame Emmitt Smith. Hell, I even blame Nate Newton. Why aren't these OGs properly schooling Dak on how to handle this? There's two things I know a little something about. Food and Becky's. Dak story don't add up. Nah, man. It's too much food for 10 people. I've been to these parties. I've thrown these parties. That's way too much food for 10 people. Let me tell you what the key telltale on all this is, though. It's the broccoli. Did y'all see the broccoli? They went past it real quick. The broccoli tells you that this little young blonde lady, she wasn't traveling alone. She had friends with her. That's who was eating the broccoli. I'm not buying the story. Dak, you've messed up. Harvey Levin, TMZ, they coming for you. They're going to have all the details on this party. I'm not buying it. Marcellus, help me out here or tell me I'm crazy. Are you buying Dak's story, fewer than 10 people, or do you buy TMZ that he threw a full-blown party at his house?
I'm riding with Dak. And since you said you crazy, that ain't going to soften the blow. You crazy. You using circumstantial evidence, which is a sped-up video showing you a platter lineup, and you telling me and try to say it with conviction that this had to be north of 10 people, closer to 30 people. Whitlock, we all have thrown parties, and I have this impulse, this instinct that when I throw a party, I'm going to always overdo it. The worst thing I could ever hear at my party is someone saying, oh, you don't have that? And that's how I prepare for a party. So I'm going to overdo it. And put yourself in Dak's shoes if you're in your 20s, a football player, quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Not only are you going to overdo it, but there's no negative consequence. Guess what? All of this is going to be leftovers. That's going to be good for me. I ain't leaving the crib that much. I'm catering it, and these going to be some bomb leftovers. I think TMZ got this one wrong. One, TMZ, the way that they play it out is they do their research. They do their investigation, and they look for either the most sensational, salacious, whatever can indict the person and convict them first and foremost. And this is the best attempt they could come up with, which is a sped-up video over some platters, and then a picture of only 5 people. But then you see a dinner setting with 10 people. If you can't prove to me with an actual picture, that there are more than 10 people there, I'm going to trust the guy who actually threw the damn party. Not a gathering, a party. And it was Dak, and I believe Dak.
Y'all got this whole thing twisted up. The Law and Order deal, the Dak and him having leftovers. Y'all got this all messed up. Let me make this clear for y'all. It is Ezekiel Elliott, a.k.a. Blade Brown. This whole thing made me think about Class Act, not Law and Order, all right? Dak Prescott is one, a.k.a. Duncan Penderuse. He's the school nerd, all right? They used Dak's house, all right? But Blade Brown brought Becky. Blade Brown made sure that he was consulting one Duncan Penderuse, Dak Prescott, on what the menu should be, and that's where the broccoli came from, all right? Y'all got to make sure y'all clear on this. It is not Dak Prescott messing up. It was merely his home. This is merely circumstantial based upon Dak not having his contract, all right? If this was last year, this would be at Ezekiel Elliott's home, and Dak Prescott probably wouldn't even be there, and that would be an accurate story of how Blade Brown is getting down during the pandemic. So y'all are all off. You got to pay attention to the real issue. It's Blade Brown, Zeke Elliott.
You're making my point, LeVar, because this is what I believe. I do believe Dak had dinner with 7, 8, 9 people. But I would imagine Dak lives in a big enough house where additional people could be someplace else socializing. And so to me, if there's less than 10 people at your house, you don't say fewer than 10 people. You say there was 8 people at my house. Here's their names, blah, 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 blah. This story's BS. But less than fewer people I had dinner with, I think he can be honest and say, that's who I had dinner with. But TMZ, again, Marcel, my thought, I watched TMZ's report. They had two different people say their sources told them that up to 30 people eventually came through Dak's house. Why would a police call if it was just 7 or 8 people? Somebody in the neighborhood certainly seemed to think it was a bigger deal than just a regular random dinner party. No?
No. There's a lot to unpack here. First of all, TMZ, the way that they get their unidentified sources is they pay. And if you're incentivized to tell the story and exaggerate, you're going to exaggerate. Show me the picture. I don't want to hear there were 30 people. You try to tell me you took a picture of a dog and some platters of French fries and broccoli and no picture of 30 people? Yeah, right. And TMZ has gotten it wrong before, even though they bat 99% in terms of accuracy. They have gotten it wrong before. This is a situation where you don't identify the number of people there if you're Dak. You know why? Because he actually has a guilty conscience, not for this event, not for this particular moment, but he knows that, all right, I violated social distance rules. I've taken pictures hugging other athletes in workouts. So he's sitting there now being convicted of something he didn't do, but in the spirit of what was being done, he's done that and violated that before. So that's why he's not getting particular with details. He got a guilty conscience. But let me tell you one more thing in short, a story. When I was a neighbor in San Diego of some old people in my community, and it seemed like every other day they were calling the police on me. And I mean, I was having gatherings, 3 people, 5 people, 7 people over. Police always at the door talking about it. And you know what I figured out? It wasn't racial. It was ageism. Them old people are so pissed off that a 25-year-old is living next door to them where they had to work their whole life. And at age 60, they were able to buy the same house he could buy on his first contract. So don't give me this whole, why would the police be called if there were only 8 people there? They do it all the time.
I've been a part of that as well, Marcellus Wiley. That is one amazing point. Another point that I'll add to that great point, by the way, how many photos were released of Dak Prescott, Duncan Pender use in these releases, right? Who was in the pictures? Who was in the pictures? Blade Brown. Blade Brown in the pictures.
Yep.
Right? Them pictures show Blade Brown. Blade Brown brought the party. Whoever was there, it was Blade
That's
Brown.
Z,
that bottom.
By the way.
He is running. He is running the house party ring. It's going to end up being at somebody else's house, right? Because he is the ringleader of this. All right. Look at him in the background. Look at that devious look on. You can't even really see
LeVar,
it.
LeVar, let me ask you this.
Tell.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, LeVar, because you're leaving the door cracked. Do you believe there were more than 10 people at Dak's house Friday night?
I believe if there were more than 10 people there, it was not because of Duncan Pender Hughes. It was not on him. So if he said it was less than 10 people, wherever he was at in the house, you best believe there was less than 10 people where Dak Prescott was in that house.
Marcellus, let me ask you this. Why did Stephen Jones reach out to Dak and basically tell him, get in line here? If there were less than 10 people, do you think the Cowboys would have reached out and somewhat scolded Dak?
Well, one, I wasn't on that phone call. Reaching out doesn't mean I scolded you. I want to hear your side of the story because these reports are painting you in a negative light. And last time we checked, you've never done anything wrong in terms of being a Dallas Cowboy and the leader of this franchise, face of the franchise. And let me educate people on the rules for being a face of a franchise. It's not just if you've done something wrong. It's also that nothing can be said and reported or suggested that you did something wrong. You're in uncharted territory when you're talking about a fourth rounder named Dak Prescott now being the face of the franchise in terms of responsibility. So I think Steven just wanted to say, look, I'm not trying to convict you, brother. I just want to know, why is this story having so much legs and people conversating about it when you didn't do anything? You need to set the record straight. Immediately, Dak comes out and tries to set the record straight. But you know how we roll. We don't want to take that as an honest assessment. So I just think that Dak had to answer to his boss, but at the same time, doesn't mean that he did anything wrong.
I will end on this note. His boss said, we won't be seeing any more of that. And so whatever that is, maybe it was less than 10 people. We won't be seeing any more of that. Maybe it was more than 30. Maybe it was closer to 30, and we won't be seeing any more of that. What we will be seeing is more Speak for Yourself, brought to you by Hyundai. Bucky Brooks is around the corner. There's a report that the Browns may be trying to trade OBJ to the Vikings. Speak for Yourself from the crib. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's move to a very big story, very interesting story. And we'll be joined by Bucky Brooks. We're going to go out to his crib for this segment. But let's move to a big story emanating from New York. One of the co-hosts from Maggie and Moose, or Moose and Maggie from WFAN, I think his name is Mark Malusis, has reported that the Browns and the Minnesota Vikings are in discussions to trade OBJ to Minnesota. All right, the report has been shot down or somewhat diminished by other reporters, I think, including Mary Kay Abbott, who's longtime Browns beat reporter. But the question we want to ask here is, do we think the Browns want to move on from OBJ? Marcellus, what say you?
Absolutely not. I don't think that if you're the new coach, Kevin Stefanski, you come into the Cleveland situation and you look at a talent like OBJ and the first thought is to get rid of him. I think you try to figure out how to effectively use him, how to get the most out of him. And if there are any issues that are beyond reputation, I mean, that are actual issues, you try to work them out. You remember that if you're coming from a new situation, all you've experienced is what you've heard. But now, if you're Kevin, you come into this situation, you say, you know what? I want to see this experience. I'm not just going to buy into what others are telling me because I need to know what materializes from this interaction of being with Odell Beckham Jr. We know what he's going to do on the field. Even last year, productive year, not by his standards, but playing injured. And there are bigger problems on this roster. If you want to look at production, who is suffering, who's not doing the best things out there for this ball club, Odell does not come to the front of that line. So, no, I didn't buy this report when it first occurred, and I'm glad some credible people have gone out there and have now said that they don't believe it as well.
Yeah, I don't buy this report because, let's be honest, Odell Beckham Jr. is the Browns' most talented player, particularly on offense. He is the one that makes it go. And I know people will talk about Nick Chubb, and I know Jarvis Landry is there, but make no mistake, the guy that defensive coordinators are staying up at night worrying about defending is Odell Beckham Jr. Kevin Stefanski would make a grave mistake if he comes in there and tries to remove Odell Beckham Jr. without at least giving it a chance. When you have a talented player like this, a guy who has 1,000-yard seasons in every season that he's been fully healthy, I don't know why you remove it. I know there's a clickbait element to Odell Beckham Jr., and I know he is a lot to deal with when it comes to his persona and the way that he acts. However, you don't dismiss talent without fully exhausting it. The Browns still have to exhaust the Odell Beckham Jr. experience.
Disagree with both of you all. I think y'all have misinterpreted the story. Remember, it's coming out of New York. That's OBJ land. That's where he spent most of his time. So you all may be right. Maybe the Browns don't want to move on from OBJ, but maybe OBJ has made it clear to the Browns he'd like to move on from them. How do you accomplish that? The Vikings lose Stephon Diggs. The Browns' new head coach just left the Vikings situation. Perhaps OBJ is the driving force for the leak story and for the interest the Browns may have in moving on from him. If I'm the Browns or if I'm anybody looking at this situation, OBJ to me needs to be with an established veteran quarterback, a Kirk Cousins rather than a young guy who has struggled and has had difficulty managing his relate with Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham Jr., both tugging at him. I could see OBJ, and he's been very quiet this offseason, quietly trying to get his way out of Cleveland and perhaps giving the Browns a reason to try to want to move him. By putting this story out there, to me, that's going to light up phone lines all over the NFL. OBJ's available. There's a chance they would consider trading. So now perhaps you increase what the Vikings are offering, or you bring other teams into that equation, the Los Angeles Rams or whomever else that thinks maybe they're a receiver away from fixing their quarterback problems. But I can see the Browns thinking OBJ with an inexperienced quarterback trying to get his legs, maybe a better fit for OBJ is with someone like Kirk Cousins, an established quarterback. Marcellus?
Yeah. I get it. That's the fix. So Stephon Diggs wasn't happy with Kirk Cousins, but Odell will be. Like, that's the fix. That makes no sense. But, like, I mean, think about this, man. This story.
Kirk Cousins not better than Baker? New York.
Oh, he is better than Baker, but he ain't good enough to try to leave and abort where you are. It could be looked at as a lateral move for some because we don't know the upside of Baker Mayfield. We know what Kirk Cousins is. It's still higher than Baker right now, but it could be something that is attained by Baker if he figures this thing on out. So here's my thing. If it comes out of New York, it sounds like it is someone who didn't cleanse their palate, someone who still used a reputation against Odell and saying, you know what? This is the same old Odell. What? You just said that he's been quiet this offseason. Odell and I have talked a lot this offseason. Everyone's being quiet because, one, we're all social distancing, but more than that, he's not trying to force himself out of that situation. The most important thing to Odell right now is getting healthy, playing healthy, putting that product back on the field that he knows he can do in terms of being healthy and performing. Not trying to run out of Cleveland to land in Minnesota and may go backwards. If you talk about the potential of the Browns this year, their tremendous offseason and acquisitions versus going to Minnesota, a good team, but who knows how this is going to shake out. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I still continue to have a tough time believing. And I think from Odell's standpoint, I think Odell clearly understands where he is right now. If Odell wants another chunky payday, he knows that he has to go about his business and be a guy that can command some interest from other teams. The way that he can do that is through his performance on the field. He has to put down a couple of big time seasons so he can get into that 20 plus million dollar territory, which is where he probably desires to be. And so I think what we're going to see, at least for a year, we're going to see Odell Beckham Jr. on his best behavior. And I'm not saying that he's not been a model citizen, but I think he's going to be very quiet. I think he is going to let his play do his talking so then he can go back to the table and get some more Bitcoin.
Listen, I want to be crystal clear on this. I don't even think if OBJ was trying to get to Minnesota or out of Cleveland, I don't see that remotely as a negative thing, a negative knock on OBJ. It may be a level of self-awareness and clarity and maturity. Like, wow, I got this young quarterback that's struggling. We don't know what he is. Me and Jarvis may be too much for him to handle. I've got a rookie head coach. Can I get somewhere in a more stable environment? Proven coach, proven quarterback. I think that would be a mature thing. And by being quiet, because again, there's ways to make noise. You got social media. You can go out and work out with Antonio Brown. You can go out and work out with Dez Bryant. You can go throw a party at your house and let TMZ report that you're not socially distancing. Odell Beckham Jr. knows how to get attention. He is purposely not getting attention. Real bad boys move in silent. This would be a mature move in my view if OBJ was looking to get somewhere with a proven veteran coach and a more proven quarterback than Baker Mayfield. I wouldn't knock OBJ at all for that kind of hustle. All right, we got to go. Darnell Smith is going to join us with the question of the day. Bill Laimbeer says LeBron is better than MJ. Is that hate or the truth? Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this.
It's Darnell.
My guy.
My question of the day.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on a wonderful Wednesday afternoon. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, let's go out to his crib. Take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about Michael Jordan and LeBron James. The debate about which of these guys is the GOAT always seems to be making news. Now, one of Jordan's biggest rivals, Bill Laimbeer of the Bad Boy Pistons, has decided to weigh in. Laimbeer had some fierce battles with MJ, but actually says LeBron is the greatest basketball player of all time, and that is not even close. So I want to ask you guys, do you think Laimbeer really believes this?
No, I don't. I believe Bill Laimbeer is being very loyal to Isaiah Thomas, and I respect that. Isaiah Thomas was treated poorly by Michael Jordan and was left off an Olympic team, and it was a disgrace that happened. Isaiah Thomas certainly belonged on that team. He's one of the greatest players, particularly of that era. Isaiah Thomas and the Detroit Pistons, they wrote the Jordan rules and used to beat up Michael Jordan. And Bill Laimbeer and most of the Detroit Pistons, not fans of Michael Jordan. They don't get the proper respect that they deserve because of the Bulls dynasty and Michael Jordan. I don't buy this remotely that that's what he believes. Anybody, to me, with an objective opinion knows that Michael Jordan is the GOAT, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the GOAT, one or the other, but it ain't LeBron James right now. LeBron has a shot, but it ain't him right now.
I actually believe him. I believe him. I think he's being honest. I think that he is telling us something that we all know about ourselves, that so much of life is about your perspective. And he's a former peer of Michael Jordan, a foe of Michael Jordan. So when Michael Jordan's flying through the lane and all of our collective mouths are open in awe, he's in there defending this guy. And he's not as enamored with him because he's not an outsider. And because of that unique perspective, he was able to see the greatness of Michael Jordan, but also some of the issues or flaws in his game. So if you look at this conversation, a lot of people get it confused and they can't see it clearly. They always think who's more accomplished is always the greater one. That's not the case. Is Bill Russell a better player than Wilt Chamberlain? No, he's just more accomplished. And in this conversation, MJ versus LeBron, they're closer in terms of ability and accomplishment. So that makes it a little confusing for people. But here's something that you can argue against MJ being the GOAT and giving it to LeBron. LeBron's going to go down in history with more points, more rebounds, more assists, but not more championships. And I think that's what MJ can always hold as his gold standard with his resume. I'm undefeated in the finals. I never went to a game seven. No one can argue that, but there are other attributes to the game of basketball that LeBron actually trumps Michael Jordan, and I named a few.
You know what? I actually believe he's telling the truth. You got to think about it. Like you said, Whitlock, Bill Laimbeer, he played alongside Isaiah Thomas. That was his leader. So we all know Isaiah Thomas is the guy who's a team-first guy. Michael Jordan is a guy who a lot of people consider was a little selfish, as great as he was. So from Bill Laimbeer's perspective, he's going to lean more towards the team-first guy, a la LeBron James. So to me, it makes sense why he would think LeBron is the GOAT or is better than Michael Jordan, especially when these guys competed year after year. And early on, the Pistons gave Jordan everything he wanted and then some. MJ could not get past those Bad Boy Pistons until, you know, Scottie Pippen came along and he got developed, and, you know, and we know what happened from there on. But from Laimbeer's perspective, he was like, shoot, we battle right there alongside with Jordan and beat him. So why would I put him as the GOAT?
Well, I want to say this about numbers. Numbers don't lie, but people can twist numbers and make them tell a falsehood. Michael Jordan spent 3 years in college. LeBron came straight to the NBA right out of high school at 18 and started putting up those numbers. Obviously, Michael set out for those 2 years. LeBron's going to pass him in a lot of stats just based off longevity, better science today than what they had during Michael Jordan's era. Michael, I think, lost nearly an entire season to an injury. So I get it that LeBron James has a case to be the greatest of all time. But for Bill Laimbeer to have witnessed participated in a whole little set of rules and a strategy to take down Michael Jordan. They wrote a book about it called The Jordan Rules. As great as LeBron has been, and his impact has been pretty enormous, I don't think his impact on the game of basketball matches Michael Jordan's. I'm not even sure if his impact in terms of just changing the game. Steph Curry changed the game. He changed the style of the way the NBA has been played right now. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when he changed the game, they changed rules in college basketball for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. LeBron has been tremendous. We'll see. Maybe he can. They'll restart this season. He'll get another championship, and he'll enhance his resume for being better than Michael Jordan. But I'm telling you, I love Isaiah Thomas, not as much as Bill Laimbeer, but I love Isaiah Thomas. I really do. But I'm not going to get crazy about it and start disrespecting Michael Jordan because I got a loyalty to Isaiah Thomas.
Look, to me, the longevity argument falls flat when you start to say, oh, LeBron's just going to pass Jordan because he played longer. Well, Vince Carter's going to play longer than anybody already did. And he's not surpassing Michael Jordan or LeBron James. It's not just a longevity argument. It's greatness and consistent excellence is why LeBron is going to surpass Michael Jordan. The injuries to Michael Jordan, the tap out and taking time away from the game, all should count against Michael Jordan. Not, oh, by the way, he did these certain things or this happened to him. All that's on your resume. And I can easily understand the argument that Michael Jordan is the greatest because you talk about impact. But here's the thing about LeBron and his impact. It hasn't fully been felt yet. I mean, give LeBron 20 years post-retirement like Michael Jordan has right now, and let's see his impact. Because right now, as he's playing, if you were to forecast what that impact looks like, it's going to be tremendous and rival Michael Jordan. So in terms of impact, it's too soon for LeBron James to be truly measured. But in terms of greatness on the court, he's still doing it. And that's why I think this is an argument.
All right, stick around. Don't go anywhere. Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, they're having a shirt-off contest. They're trying to build their bodies, which is the right approach for an NFL quarterback. All right, Steve Berline is going to join us from his crib. Stick around. Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. We're going to be joined in this segment by former NFL quarterback Steve Berline. We're going to go out to his crib, bringing Steve in because we want to talk some more about Jameis Winston and Cam Newton. Jameis Winston released a photo over social media, shirtless, running in sunglasses, and everybody's talking about how ripped he looks and how he's getting in great shape. Of course, Cam Newton has spent the entire offseason posting every day about his workouts and, you know, how great a shape he's getting in and how hard he's working. And for me, Marcellus and I have been having this debate. I don't like all this focus on your body. I've never seen a great quarterback that wins a Mr. Olympia contest. I think it's the wrong focus for Cam Newton. I think it's the wrong focus for Jameis Winston. The great quarterbacks. I saw a picture from Lamar Jackson that he posted this week about his new tattoo, and he looks like a damn toothpick. Patrick Mahomes has a little bit of a pot belly. I just don't think either one of these guys, Jameis Winston or Cam Newton, are focused on the right thing. Marcellus, before we hear from Steve Berline and get his take, a quarterback's take, go ahead and restate your position. Do you think either one of these guys are winning the offseason with their workout routines and their new bodies?
Yeah, and I think it's Cam Newton. I actually think that Jameis and him coming out with that picture running around the track actually is going to lose the offseason because of that picture. I'll get to that in a sec. The reason why Cam is winning is because what he's showing is servicing two different things. One is, I'm showing you that I take my craft seriously, but more importantly, that I'm healthy. Like, all these activities, him pulling the ropes, pulling the tires, and all the sled work, all that stuff that Cam is doing is showing you that, hey, that Liz Frank injury is behind me. So it actually is serving as something good in a time where we're social distancing, and he's not able to get in front of these teams and show them that he's good. So He wins. Now, I'm not mad at Jameis for finally getting in shape. And shout out to his trainer, Otis Leverett, my former teammate and my boy. Here's the problem with it, though. Hey, man, you've been in the league 5 years. And all of a sudden now, when you're unemployed, you're going to take this thing serious enough where you're going to look like you take your craft seriously? Why not 5 years ago? Why not 4 years ago? If I'm a GM, I sit back and say, I wonder if he's fully motivated in success or in failure. Because some people need to hit the bottom before they get right, and some people could do it while they're on top. If you're going to be a franchise quarterback, you have to do it while you're on top. It's a little disturbing to see Jameis wait 5 years to finally look like that.
You know, I take the opposite approach, Marcellus, and I think that you're right, that there are ways to win and there are ways to lose as far as this goes. But in my opinion, you look at what the purpose of the post is. Is a motivation vanity? You like looking at yourself. You like being in the middle of the attention. You like being on the social media radar. Or are you trying to show people that you are getting serious about this, that you are taking this opportunity seriously? I think it's important that Jameis Winston posted that picture because he has been known as a guy who's been a little bit lazy about taking care of himself and about maybe not making things as important as they should be. So I think there's a post there that we see that shows that he has gotten himself into shape. He is looking leaner. He is taking this seriously. He does realize he kind of messed up and he wants to make the statement that he can get himself back to where he needs to be and that he is going to be a team guy. He's going to come in ready to go wherever he goes. Cam on the other side, I'm a big fan of Cam. I always have, but I do believe he's always been a little bit too caught up in Cam. And I think that picture that you're looking at right now is a picture that doesn't show him working out. It doesn't show him proving that his foot is in good shape or that his arm is that his shoulder's back. It shows him posing, looking like the freak that we all know he is. We've always known that Cam Newton is a specimen, a physical specimen. He's not showing us anything new there. He's showing us that he likes the way he looks. And I think that is interpreted negatively if you're posting because you want people to look at you and see how good you look, because the vanity side of it, I think it can be construed as a negative. You know, Bill Belichick, if he's looking at Cam Newton as maybe a possibility up there, who knows if he is? He doesn't want a me guy. He wants a guy that is going to come in and blend in and not draw all that attention to himself. He wants a guy that's going to come in and say, hey, I'm here to help this team win another ring. It's not about me. I want to be a part of it, but it's not about me. So I think that it does help Jameis in this situation. I think it can hurt Cam if he continues to post pictures that are just kind of showing off that he's the specimen that we already know that he is.
Well, at one point, he challenged The Rock to a pose-off, and I'm talking about Cam Newton. But I just think for both of these guys, and I get it for Jameis, there have been questions about his body. But for both of these guys, the questions about them are between the ears. Jameis's decision-making on the football field is the biggest question. For Cam Newton, it's about leadership. And is Cam always about Cam? Or is he about the team and able to galvanize his teammates and be the great leader? He had a nice little run in 2015 where his play was so dominant, guys fell in line behind him, and he was the great leader. But I look at someone who is this obsessed with their body, and just I've never seen it from the quarterback position. I've seen it from linebackers. I've seen it from running backs. I've seen it from wide receivers. But the quarterbacks aren't this obsessed with their bodies. They're more, the great ones to me are more obsessed with the film room and the study and what goes on between their ears.
Well, for me, that's not fair to what's happening in NFL in the transition to quarterbacks that are dual threats. You're going to see better bodies because usually the more athletic quarterbacks that can actually move are going to look better. And the days of yesteryear, that was a position where if you weren't as athletic, hey, maybe you should play quarterback because you get to stand still pretty much and sling the rock. And so we saw guys who didn't have the optimal body type to play other positions as well. So yeah, you kind of got bunkered into playing the quarterback in part because you couldn't play anything else. And then it turned into a premium position. Everyone knows that. But that's unfair to Cam Newton and the guys who are coming next who are going to look a lot better than the quarterbacks of yesterday. Another thing that I take issue with is that Cam Newton, it's weird. He's always, his props are always given to him reluctantly. Like, people are always like, okay. Cam's not a me guy. There was a time where he was on a team where there was no one else to talk about offensively but him. So guess what? It became all about Cam because it couldn't be about anybody else in terms of that team's success fully. So Cam Newton now is trying to show you that I'm working to get back because the only thing that can stop me are these injuries. And I'm getting myself in the best shape possible. With Jameis, he's saying basically, okay, you guys are right. For 5 years, I wasn't taking it as seriously as I should have. Now it's the time. Why? Because I don't have a job. That I don't like that type of motivation. I need a guy who feels that pressure and that heat, even in success, not just when he's unemployed or in failure.
Well, you look at Jameis, and there's no doubt that he's at that point in his career where he has to realize that it's now or never for him. It's sad that it's taken him this long to figure it out. He's had his trials and tribulations all through his career to this point, very well documented. But the only thing that he can do now is hope that a team, and especially given this situation we have right now with the whole country shut down and these guys can't go and visit personally with the teams, he's got to show whatever teams might be interested out there that he is taking it seriously. So I don't fault him for that at all. And I don't think there's a vanity to this whatsoever for him. I think he knows the knocks against him. He's trying to show that he's taking it seriously. And I don't think he's got a real big history of posting himself without a shirt on and doing things like that to draw attention to himself. I don't think that's his personality. With Cam, it's always been kind of about, I like to be in the spotlight. Think about his YouTube video last year where he's wearing the beret, smoking the cigar, drinking the glass of Cabernet, and having that little dark lit room in there and trying to have his little conversation, showing all of Cam Nation that he, you know, he's going to do what he's going to do and he's going to do it his way. Those things, I think, work against him, and he hasn't been able to quite figure that out. I've always supported Cam. I've always felt that he's going to be a superstar. He has come through with that part of it. He's at the point in his career, though, now, if he wants that opportunity, it should all be business. It should all be about, I am able to work out. This is what I'm doing. But it doesn't need to be every day, and it doesn't need to be the posts of him posing and challenging Rock to a pose off. That's a me thing, man. That is you're smiling, Marcellus. That is a, hey, I like the attention type of thing. And I think Witt has it right. A quarterback is not supposed to project that kind of image. There aren't many guys out there that do that.
I'm going to tell you who did it, and it blew up in their face. And I can tell you NFL executives are all sitting around saying, you know what this reminds me of? Colin Kaepernick kissing his biceps. Colin Kaepernick shirtless on the cover of magazines. Yeah. Colin Kaepernick obsessed with his body more so than preparing for the game and being the kind of leader. It undermined him in San Francisco. And I'm not saying that Cam will make the same steps, the drastic steps that Colin Kaepernick did, but there were reasons why Colin wasn't a respected leader. He was obsessed with his body. He was obsessed with Colin Kaepernick. Not a great leader. All right, we got to go.